This programme was first broadcast on ORFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Real Time Resilience, Coping During COVID-19. We join Dr. Denise Quinlan and Dr. Lucy Hone, co-directors of the New Zealand Institute of Wellbeing and Resilience, plus invited experts, as they share tips to look after your mental health and well-being during this time.
Hello and welcome to Real Time Resilience. Today we're talking about why we need to cut people, young people, some slack, and the fact that their new normal is way out of whack. I'm Dr. Denise Quinlan, and with me is Dr. Emma Woodward from the Child Psychology Service and the New Zealand Institute of Wellbeing and Resilience. Welcome, Emma.
How are you doing, Denise?
Good. Now, I think really, given that you are the person with four children under 10, how are you doing?
We're doing all right. I could turn it into a therapy session for me right now, but let's not. You know, let's take my experience, relate that to other people's experience, and let's be truthful, honest, and factual about what's going on for people right now, what might be going on for their kids, and what we can do to make the most of the situation that we're in.
And I think, so Emma and I have been chatting through what are the kind of topics that we want to cover today. And one of them is really that the first thing is about sort yourself out. As the adult in the situation, what do we need to do to be the adults? Number two, really acknowledging it's not normal. And number three, what are some strategies that might help? Yeah. So Emma, you mentioned leaning in. Talk to me about what we can be doing as caregivers and responsible adults.
So leaning in, I guess, to me, is about cultivating curiosity as to the intention behind your child's behaviour and not being automatically irritated by what they do. Which is very easy when you're all in together, you're all very close proximity, and you're not getting as much time to yourself to process things as they're going on and make sense of them. So I think leaning in for me really is, what was the intention behind that behaviour? What are you asking for? What do you need? And how can I provide that to you as your caregiver, as your parent, as your key attachment figure? What do I need to do for you right now to make you okay so we can be okay? Mm-hmm. And I guess the first step before that is that we need to be in our thinking brain so that we can have that conversation with ourselves and then with our child. So it's always still about starting with yourself and making sure that you're okay to do that.
And what kind of things have been helping you to stay okay?
So I think really trying to cultivate a sense of complete compassion for my children's worldview at the moment, trying to understand what sense they're making of it, what is going on for them. Because we've been a week now indoors, it's highly unusual for our family and many families around the world for a family of young children to be in for a week. It just is unheard of. And so what sense are you making with the experience right now? There's only so much we can do to keep you entertained. You're going to be questioning and thinking. And so what can I do to understand your behaviours as a communication of your experience? So we've had quite some random behaviour from our kids over the last few days. Not least, we went out for our gentle exercise and our seven-year-old fell off his scooter and bashed his face open and there was blood. I'm laughing now. I wasn't at the time, nor was anyone else. It was just typical because he's very good on his scooter and that's why we let him take it out. But it was a real kind of focal point for us, you know, kind of we realised actually things were different. The systems that are normally in place to make situations like that feel better were gone. We were more self-reliant. And so we used that when we came back home to talk about how are people feeling right now and what's going on for you and what did that feel like for you, and try and really view the world and the experience through their eyes. And I think once you start shifting your mind to what sense are they making of it, rather than I'm feeling tired, I'm feeling irritated, I've had enough of you, and it kind of focusing on your experience, it allows you to be the caregiver rather than irritated by what's going on, I guess. It reshifts your focus. If you kind of approach your child as, what do you need, rather than, oh my God, why are you doing that? It's a very different mindset shift about what behavior from you comes next, I think. And that's what I mean by leaning in towards the discomfort to try and make sense of it, rather than going with your instinct to escape it and go, far too much, I can't be bothered, go away, sit down, I've had enough.
Yeah. And that kind of. I've written down, see it through their eyes. I'm going, oh, that would be hugely helpful for me, I think, to really think about, so what are you experiencing? Where are you coming from? And I think if I can do that for small children, I'm much more likely to be patient.
I think so. And also, they don't have the same cognitive kind of frameworks that we have to make sense of the world. So we have many, many, many years of experience, many kind of layers to our experiences, plus a more developed thinking brain than they do. So this is going to be much more visceral and experiential and less cognitive to them. So we really need to be the thinking brain.
So it's like our full-time duty is to expect to be the thinking brain an awful lot more than we have been.
Yeah, and help them process situations as they arise. Yeah. You know, they're going to be behaving in a way that's not typical for them, essentially. And we need to make sure that when they do behave in those ways, that we help them make sense of why they did that, so they don't come away with a sense of shame. So some of my kids have been doing some random things, things that they wouldn't normally or typically do, and things that potentially I would have had a more punitive response to, kind of, I can't believe you did that. But in this kind of situation, I've been very much more like, I understand your intention wasn't that, but the knock-on effect was this, so how are we going to put it right? And using that more restorative justice approach. And I think that's, if we've got anything at the moment, we've got time to use that connection to work through things.
Okay, let's come back and talk more about what a restorative approach might look like for various infractions. I mean, you mentioned also that noticing your earlier irritation cues and cultivating patience. Talk to me a little bit more about those.
So I think when we're going about our daily lives, when we're not in a self-isolation experience, we are able to escape our thoughts quite readily by actions. And actually, a lot of the stuff that we might do to avoid our thinking or our thoughts or the kind of dark stuff that goes through our head has been removed from us. We're being confronted with it quite readily at the moment because we haven't got those distraction techniques available to us in the way that we've had before. So I think now's a really good time to be practicing things like mindfulness to make sure that we can feel when we're about to tip over and listen to those thoughts and start believing them as our truth, so we can notice and do something about it before our behavior follows our thoughts.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And in terms of for frazzled parents who would like to cultivate a little more patience, obviously what you've said about trying to see things through the child's eyes is one strategy to develop more patience. And another one is acknowledging that you are now the thinking brain. Are there any other things that might help develop patience?
Well, I think patience is a state of mind. I think to be able to be patient and to be able to allow things to unfold and tolerate any frustration that you might feel is a skill that we need to cultivate. But we're better at doing that when our own cup is full up. So we need to be starting with making sure that we're getting what we need so we can be present for another. So if that's making space in your day, where you've kind of structured the activities that you've got a downtime as well. There's some quiet reading time so you can go and do something. And I say quiet reading time, tongue in cheek, as a mum to four boys, but making sure that there is space in your day where you get that time to go and rest, recoup, and get yourself back up again. Nobody can be patient all the time, every day. You know, it's not possible to do that unless you've got something that's replenishing you. So making space in your day for those things to happen too, it's almost like a moral obligation for your children to be able to take care of yourself first.
I used to think that when my kids were little, you know, why don't you bring me your most irritating behavior at 9 o'clock when I still have resources? Come on, bring it on. I can be patient at 9 in the morning. 5:30 in the afternoon, different story, you know, especially if I hadn't had a break.
And bedtimes, you know, you kind of, you have this ideal that we've had a lovely day till we've done all this. And, you know, endings are really tricky for kids anyway. They're going to go into the room. They're going to be separating from you. There's all that kind of stuff that goes on. And they want a little bit more of you. And you've just got no more to give. And, you know, be compassionate with yourself. If you have a little fracas at bedtime, it's not going to damage them. Kids are generally resilient. But, you know, if you have to kind of tag team it with your parent, with your other parent, if you can, or just, you know, now is the time to put your kid to bed with Spotify and some headphones and an audio book. If that's what you need to do to have a calm bedtime, then just do it, you know, lower the bar.
Yeah, I love lower the bar. And I think for me, I know when I was kind of out of resources, it was, you want me to stay with you? Right. No, I'll read another page of that book and I will fall asleep on your bed. It's not ideal parenting, but you know, you're happy, I'm happy.
Well, you know, but what's not ideal about that? You know, it's connection. You both fall into this deep, vulnerable space at the same time, together, comforted, close to each other, the way that humans are supposed to be, if you think way back in evolution. That's absolutely lovely. And that's exactly what kids need now. They need that primal nurturing experience, yeah. That stuff that makes them feel safe on that deep level. So if you could do that, then do it.
And then, you know, at about 9:30 or 10, mummy or daddy, wake up cold on top of a child's bed, wipe the drool from their face and struggle out to finish the day.
That's okay. Crawl back down the stairs, half-washed dishes, knock back the rest of the wine.
Yeah.
And then can't get to sleep again.
Same thing played out all over the country. Yeah. So, Emma, we've already kind of moved on to the second of our themes, which is it's not normal. Lower the bar. And this new normal is way out of whack. So you were talking about lowering expectations, but also about the fact that this community trauma will impact people in different ways depending on their experiences. Talk to us a bit more about that.
So what we're experiencing now is the world is in a different state. You know, there's this fear of a virus. Everybody has been asked to change their behavior very, very dramatically. It's very shocking and it can feel very traumatic. And this can, I don't know about you, but I've been having some very random, weird dreams. And it's my brain processing stuff. And I've been kind of, it's almost like I've had this ability to go back and like dig deep onto everything that I've ever done in my life that I'm just that little less than proud about and kind of reflect on it. And when I've done, I was thinking, why is this happening now? And actually, you know, this is a trauma response. We're in a state of community collective trauma. And so if we do have that dark stuff within us, as everybody does, then this is the time when the veil between the dark stuff and our everyday functioning self is going to be the thinnest. Mm-hmm. And we need to be very aware of that and be okay with that and just sit, accept it and be okay.
Yeah. And I know talking with Lindsay Hone about this, you know, the people of Christchurch lived through the earthquakes, quake brain. Lucy had her own family trauma and loss of her daughter. And then last year, the mosque shootings were another collective trauma. And so many people in Christchurch felt they had been triggered back to the upset of the quakes after March 15th. And so I guess, depending on all the people in our bubble, if they've had different traumas, they're going to be coping with all those things.
They are. And I think this is totally the time. And when I say lower the bar, I mean, lower the bar of societal expectations upon you. Don't lower the bar in terms of your nurturing, your self-care and facilitating good quality connections and empathy and understanding.
Raise that bar.
And less of the societal expectations on you. There are, you know, they've gone now. All we have is our bubble. So let's focus on our bubble and the things that are going to keep your bubble well and healthy and knowing what's going on for you. That might be some triggering of old stuff coming up because we're in a very different situation and the stuff we normally do to distract ourselves on a daily basis from that is gone. Connect as much as you can with your kids by leaning in. Try and process on their behalf. and understand that they don't have the cognitive framework with which to process this experience. So you're going to have to do a lot of parenting from their intention rather than the visible behavior. And I think that's the biggest thing that we can do, is be generous in our assumptions of their intentions. Because if we parent their behavior, which might be slightly out of whack because this is not their new normal, we're going to end up with a very fractious, punitive experience right now.
I like that. I like the idea of parenting the intention. And I think we are going to have, you know, we need to see things through their eyes, parent the intention, and lower the bar. And then if we think, Emma, about strategies and what are some of the things that are going to be useful, and you said up connection, time together, what other things would you add into the mix?
So I just think really hone in on those times that you can get can do stuff with your kids and you can do it well. Know yourself. You know, I can't cook with my kids. It turns into an absolute no-go show. We can't cook. I'm too much of a perfectionist and the mess. I'll stop there because otherwise this will turn.
My mum talks about when something is really, really challenging and frustrating, she says, oh, it was like trying to make scones with a child.
Oh, not alone.
No.
But do stuff that you can do with your kids. Just focus on the stuff that you love and focus on some of the stuff that they love too. I know that Anna Mowat was saying around make space in the day to try and to do something with them that they love, you know, make it about them and their interests. And I think if you can do that, and you can do it well, and you can do it with presence and authenticity, then do it, because it's going to be much more meaningful. So be selective in that. You know, the second that you're bored or checking your phone or thinking, go me, I've been playing for the last half an hour and it's really only 5 minutes, you know, that's not going to be the benefit. The benefit is doing stuff that you can both enjoy together, so you can be present and authentic and genuine in that connection.
Nice. And I love, you mentioned Anna Mowat. So Anna works with Sparklers as part of the All Right campaign, who have been supporting wellbeing in schools since the Christchurch earthquakes. And now we're very lucky that that resource has gone nationwide. And I know when I spoke to Anna the other day, she said her things were check in with your kids and don't expect them to be coping as adults do. And I think that's very aligned with what you were saying, Emma, about expect that you're going to be the thinking brain for a while.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. They're not. They don't have the capacity to process this situation as we do. And they shouldn't have access to the information that we have anyway. They need age-appropriate information.
I think that's another huge area, this thing of, is what we're doing helping or harming? What are my kids seeing? Is it working for them? Is it productive? Whatever they're doing, not just screen time and information that they're looking at, but generally, whatever they're spending their days on. And like I was sharing with you earlier, it's not just children that need to do it. We need to do it as adults as well. And I had a spectacular example last night of a strategy that really didn't work for me, which was someone had sent me a video, which was really nice, of One Day More from Les Miserables. And when I went to bed, I put my headphones on and put some of it on. And I listened to I Dreamed a Dream, that life could be so different from this hell I'm living, and, you know, and pestilence, death, disaster. And it was really not helpful. Like that is off my playlist for a long time.
And I think, you know, there's that, is it helping or harming? And I do think a lot of people are glued to social media. So we are social beings, we're craving connection, we're in these tiny bubbles, but we've got these little devices here that are our kind of lifeline to the outside world. But how we're using this is really impacting the way that we are then moment to moment as we come off our devices with our kids. And if our kids see us glued to those devices and then our demeanour changes because we've been, we've been exposed to some kind of shocking or jarring information or something that takes us somewhere else, they're going to be looking to us as their role models, and they're not going to come away from this as a belief that we're a resilient family. They're going to come away from this as a belief that it was a really shocking and scary time. We need to be really careful that actually you're right, what are we doing now? Is it helping or is it harming? Do we need to be doing that right now?
And so if I, some of the resources that the Sparklers have shared, I really like. There's some, so that we'll attach them on our webpage as a PDF for people to see, because I think they are lovely. And some of their, they have little post-it notes of things to remember, useful things to remind children of. And some of them we've already touched on, but they include things like, I can only do what I can do.
I think that's a good one for grown-ups too, though, Denise.
I'm with you. And this time shall pass.
Yeah.
Trust that it will be okay. And I saw something recently. I was a parent who'd gone through a very, very difficult time with the illness of a child. And one of the messages they were given was, this is a season. Life has seasons and they change. You know, this, we're not going to be in this forever. And I think that's important to remember. But the other ones, it's okay to feel however I feel. And I can focus on things that are in my control and I am resilient. And I guess when I saw that one, I thought, oh yeah, what a great activity to spend time with children thinking about, let's think about some of the different times and examples of when you were resilient. Remember the time you coped when you came off your scooter? We're all going to have examples.
I was just thinking, like, you know, we came home and I've never seen so much blood come out of a small child and actually him be generally okay. It was horrific. And then obviously having to get back and not be 2 meters away from everybody. Do you know what he did when we came home and he stopped bleeding? Do you know what one of the first things he said to me was? Where's my...
I know, like, we lost you at this crucial juncture. What did he say?
He said, where's my first aid kit? Because they'd been given a free first aid kit at school. He wanted to use his stuff in his first aid kit. And he started patching himself up like Bear Grylls. Like, he wouldn't let me do it. He was going to do it himself. He was like that. I'm done.
That is self-reliant.
You are a tough cookie. He had the cuddles and he did the problem solving. He was a tough cookie. And that's what, then we could talk about that, you know, that was great.
Yeah. And I'm sure in every family there'll be examples of times, you know, what are the challenges they faced? What are the things they've seen their kids cope with? And what a great conversation.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the lasting message, the passing message through that, is that things can get really, really bad, but we can survive this and we can be okay afterwards. You know, that going back to that whole season thing again, this is just a moment in time. Yeah. This time will pass and we will be okay.
And I love, what makes us resilient as a family? I think that's a lovely question.
And I think that answer is different for everybody, isn't it? But I think that's probably a really nice thing to reflect on, actually, because not only is it positive and makes you think of all the good things, but actually it's reinforcing, so you know how to focus on them more explicitly in the future. It's a really good question to ask yourself.
And it could be like, my nana and granddad love us and they're here, or we've got a great sense of humor, or we have fun playing cards, or I don't know, anything. You know, what is it that makes you feel that you can cope and that you stick together?
Yeah. Mum might lose her stuff every now and then, but we know how to make her laugh afterwards, and then she can still give us a cuddle. That might be something a family said, I don't know.
In a parallel universe, near here.
Yeah.
And you know, this is what I love. I'm looking at the last of the Sparklers post-its, and they include, I don't have to fix everything, and humans can heal, grow and learn.
Yes, nice.
They're important messages.
They are important messages. Actually, I don't have to fix everything. It's a really important one for a parent when they're thinking about their kids. We can't fix this situation for our kids. We can't. We're doing the best that we can at the moment. You know, we're staying in, we're keeping ourselves safe, we're protecting other people. But we can't fix this. So we can just hold them and create an emotional response for them while they move through this experience. And I think that's very different, isn't it?
Yeah. Being with them.
Yeah. and modeling that it can be done from the top down.
Yeah, nice. And so Emma, as we, if we think about looking forward to the fact that this is a season and this period we're in now will end, you mentioned that you'd encourage families to think about, to explore the idea of what's the best that might happen. Tell us a bit more about that.
So what is the best that might happen? What can we learn from this experience and take forward with us? What have we learned new about ourselves as a family unit or a bubble in this time? And what can we take forward with us to make our lives better? What's the best that could come out of this situation? The best that could come out of this situation is that we understand each other better. We've had more time together to have those blow-ups and those reparation experiences. So we know that we're closer and tighter as a family going forward. It might well be that we've had time to think about, actually, I don't want to do that job anymore, or I don't want to do this. This is a pause. This is a moment in time. Let's use it to make the best for the future.
Yeah. And Debs Abraham, our office manager, has set herself three challenges for the lockdown. And that's to do something for love, something for work, and something for self. Three
goals. They're nice. And I think, you know, going back to what's the best that could come out of this is our community, our local community, has joined forces like you've never seen them join forces before. It's been really lovely. You know, I'm now kind of, if not face-wise, virtually, because of our local community Facebook group, the acts of generosity and kindness and the offers of help, true, authentic offers of help and altruism are flowing thick and fast. So I know outside our bubble, there's lots of other bubbles and there's lots of love that connects them. And that's a lovely feeling that I would never have felt so deeply if it hadn't have been for this experience.
Lovely. Oh, Emma, it's been great talking to you. So summing up, the things that I am taking forward are, first of all, looking after ourselves as the adults in the situation, leaning in, but really trying to see things through our children's eyes, whether they're very small or teenagers, parent the intention, not the behavior. Notice our own early irritation cues and try and head those off at the pass, take a break, look after ourselves. And then as part of the it's not normal, this new normal, to lower expectations and to really understand that with this community trauma, it's going to trigger and surface a whole lot of different things for different people. So it's really be patient, be kind.
Compassionate to yourself, yeah.
So don't expect children to behave like adults. Support them in what they're doing. Help them stay grounded and look after their well-being. And then encourage them to do what we can to think about the future. So thinking, what's the best that might happen? What's the best thing we could create out of this? And that's really about hope, isn't it?
It's totally about hope. It's about having a future focus with optimism. Yeah.
That's lovely. Emma, it's been great to talk to you today. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening. I will see you next time.
This program was first broadcast on ORFM Dunedin and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.